it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Moving on to Nancy Guthrie once again, because there's so much chaos that continues to surround this case and around these ransom notes. So while Nancy Guthrie is still missing after 6 months, one criminal case has actually closed recently, and it's not about her disappearance. A California man pleaded guilty to sending her family fake ransom texts demanding Bitcoin, milking a grieving family's worst hours for a sick game with nobody on the other end. Retired Special Agent Jennifer Coffendeffer will hopefully join us again because she's back. Jen, I'm doing your intro. We are bouncing to Nancy Guthrie and talking about the ransom notes, talking about the California guy who just pleaded guilty for sending the family fake ransom texts. And so Jennifer's joining us to talk about what this actually means and what a 5-year probation offer of torment and family mid-search has actually, what's that cause to the investigation, to the family and everything else. And so Jen, welcome back again. What do you make of this conviction?
Well, the conviction isn't what bothers me. What bothers me is the plea deal. And the plea deal to plead him down to only a harassment charge, which is only punishable in the federal system by 2 years, this particular charge. And then to plead him down, at least the plea agreement, unless he messes up, it's going to stand, is a 5-year probation. And they're stacked on top of each other. So it's not 10 years, it's only 5 years for both counts. And I think it's a travesty. I really do, because it sets a precedent in this case, a case where so many others are doing this exact same activity, as TMZ as well pointed out.
Yeah, so what does this do to the investigators? So here are the investigators. They're still doggedly going after this, trying to flesh out every little last minuscule of whatever leads they do have. And then you have this thing come around, and you have someone who's created noise and a drain of resources, personnel, and investigative tools, techniques, and things you're working on is nothing but a fraud. And so then they're not even punished to the full extent they can be. What does this do to the investigators' morale? What's it do to other leads come in? What's the overall impact?
Well, it's a huge impact, because if I'm looking at this from the FBI's point of view, and I guarantee those agents that worked on that are so irritated. I've been in those shoes so many times where you put the case together and then you have the prosecutor's office decide, listen, we're going to get our two convictions and we're going to move along. This is white collar. This is a situation where it's not violent. He didn't threaten anyone, right? He just asked for Bitcoin. So when you look at all that, I'm just trying to present both sides of the pancake. That's right. the lawyer side. But the agent side is saying, whoa, wait, why are we spending likely hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to figure out who sent those, I call them the TMZ 12, the 12 extortion notes, if they're going to get probation? Because now the judge has set the precedent. And it's going to be the same jurisdiction. They could get a different federal judge, but it's a mess.
So how do you think they were able to do this fast on this one guy when you look at Porch Guy, and granted, you know, a lot of people, including yourself, think there's other people involved that might have three marbles rolling around upstairs, not just one of the Porch Guy, you know. What made them be able to trace this guy down so fast and not actually one of the legit ones, if there are any legit ones? Because I want to get into that as well. Like, where do we stand on all these notes? Because it feels like every day matter of fact, I got to timestamp everything I'm seeing coming across the news feeds, because I don't know which is the most current on where we're standing on these notes. But to my first question, how do you think they were able to track this one down so fast and nothing else?
Oh, well, this was an easy no-brainer case. Kalela, he is not a bright bulb. He decided to use his devices that directly go to him, and he flanked the messages by messages that would only be made by him. And he used a voice, VoIPA, to make it, and then it transitioned to text. So he basically made the most simple roadmap for any agent to be able to quickly put together this case. So it's so easy. But in the other situations, you have likely VPNs being used, likely Proton emails, possibly even a public email server. You have a lot of roadblocks that are not, you know, affording the FBI the ability to figure it out.
Right. And so I want to go then to the second of my two questions in one, which is never what you should do. And that is, so can you actually iron out for us all where we are on all these notes again? So, because I'm seeing, you know, insiders inside the FBI saying none of the notes are legit, then the FBI is saying we're still investigating these notes, but you seem to have a much cleaner pulse on what's going on. Are there legit notes that they still are investigating or not? And if so, how many? What's your take on all that right now?
Okay, so we have the TMZ 12, which are extortion notes, not to be confused with ransom notes. Those people didn't come in and say they did anything to Nancy Guthrie. They just came in and said, we know what happened and we can find her for you and give you information about it, right? Totally extortive information. So those are them. That leaves us with the two other notes. So there was another note. I should say, let me make this crystal clear. The first notes that were sent to two local Tulsa stations in conjunction with TMZ. And those were the notes that said, listen, 4 million or else if not by that date, we're going to up it to 6 million. And if you don't give it to us by that date, we're going to kill Nancy. So those are the first notes.
After and we're calling, that, and I'm sorry, we're calling, and I love your distinction here. This helps a lot. So we're calling those the two original ransom notes, correct?
Well, I'm calling that the original ransom note. Yep. Really, there's only been one ransom note, and that's that
the first
note.
Right.
The second note I call an apology note. They don't ask for money. They don't ask for the ransom. They don't say anything other than we're sorry, she died. It was an accident. We didn't mean it to happen. Mea culpa, which right. I think they did for self-serving reasons. That note, however, and this is a big distinction, only went to the two local Tucson stations. That did not go to TMZ. And this is a big distinction because it's caused a lot of confusion because TMZ has said, well, wait a minute. You know, we didn't have anything that said that. Well, they didn't get anything that said that because the apology went to the local stations. And so that is what happened there. So where's the FBI on this? The FBI, in my opinion, they made it crystal clear that the TMZ 12, which they describe as extortion notes, are likely not legitimate or words to that effect. Right. In other words, the person doesn't have any knowledge. They're just doing what so many of these horrible people do, and that is try to get money out of a grieving family. But the other two notes, they've made it clear that they are, quote unquote, investigating, and they have not made their determination, but they are investigating them as being legitimate. In other words, they're spending their time because they believe they could be legitimate. So they quickly, to me, it was a slap in the face to Reuters that came out and did this blanket statement that they're all bad. The FBI, who has only said anything about this case three times, and this is one of them where they said, no, 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 not so fast. And we don't even know if it was an FBI official. I mean, and is it an FBI official that's three-step removed, you know, at the barbershop? He makes some statement. I mean, you just don't even know.
I know every time you watch things like this, and you know, they never ask the investigators because we're never allowed to talk to anyone. It always goes to the public affairs office of the local field office that's handling it, and they get their statements from the executive who's four steps removed from the actual investigation, might not have been briefed on it, or they just bounce right up to headquarters who doesn't even know anything anyway. So yeah, so I'm always amazed by what actually comes out from these things. So with that, I got a following question to this too, because this is really, I love how you draw the distinction between ransom notes and extortion notes and where those went. That actually helped me a lot because I've been tracking it, but you've been much closer on it. So how do investigators in this case, because I guarantee you, you're probably getting even more noise coming in for going for that celebrity notoriety of sending a note in and seeing if they get a response. So how are investigators right now identifying copycats as opposed to the real deal here, do you think?
Well, the number one thing, if you look at those first two communications, right, the ransom and the apology, they are joined together. If we're to believe Howard Bloom, he said that they are joined by the same IP address. Mm-hmm. That was, to me, the biggest news that came out during this time frame. I was like, wow. So now.
And we just lost her again.
Oh, good. But I see where she's going with it. So, and Howard Bloom, for everyone that's listening. So Howard Bloom, he wrote, he does a lot of investigative journalism on, I think it's InMail. Anyway, he wrote the book the very first book about the Koberger case. And when the night comes falling, as a matter of fact, we interviewed him, Tony and I did on our show here, very, very good, thorough investigative reporter. So when Howard Bloom says something, I tend to give it a little more credence. And so having those two come from that one IP address definitely was really a good filter for anything else that comes in after that. So good on us for that one. What I was going to ask Jen next, and hopefully she'll be back with us in a second, was really about whether this conviction actually helps investigators build momentum or it hinders their momentum on the investigation. What are you thinking, Todd?
I mean, it's so tough because this is a very interesting investigation. There seems to have been so many missteps along the way. And I think a lot of times when you look at police investigations, maybe even FBI, you think there's a step process, A, B, C, D. And this one has just kind of gone all over the place. So I guess my thought process on that is maybe in a typical situation, it may be a hindrance, but maybe in this case, it's actually a help. Jen's back with us so she can answer your question if you reiterate it to her.
Yeah, perfect. So Jen, the question I had for Todd is like, all right, so the FBI's created these filters, hopefully, you know, by this IP address, because I was giving Howard Bloom a lot of credit here, because we had him on the show months ago because he did the book on the Koberger case and when the night comes falling based on his investigative work. And so I tend to give that a lot of credit. So my question was, do you think with this conviction and this maybe filter of the IP addresses, does this build momentum for investigators, or was this noise that distracts them, do you think?
Well, I truly think that even though they have an IP address, I think it's just been a dead end for them for the reasons I mentioned before, which I figured early on, because this should not take this long in terms of figuring out who sent those communications. But it is going to take that long when you have those details I just discussed, right? The details concerning if they used a VPN, if they used public Wi-Fi, if they used a Proton address, right? All of those things are huge roadblocks. I mean, my hope is that they actually used an email address that might be of a foreign nature, and that they are working to cooperate with a foreign government, like, for instance, Switzerland is a big one, right. Germany is a big one, that possibly, that will lead to something. So it's complicated. It just is so complicated, and it's going to take time. I really thought by 6 months we would have something, but we don't yet.
Are you seeing any progress from your optic and what you've been covering? And in that same vein, are they still pursuing as a main lead and main area the wrench attacks that you've covered so thoroughly?
You know, I still that is just something that it's confusing to me, because, you know, I keep asking myself about that second letter, the apology letter. And then it really doesn't comport with the wrench attack. And then I was like, well, you know what? It doesn't comport with anybody taking somebody and threatening to murder them. It doesn't comport with any of that. So, you know, it's a strange situation. And it doesn't it just smell like that second letter? To me, I really do believe that it's likely AI that was used. You know, how do I write a letter to apologize for murdering somebody in a kidnapping? You know, just the verbiage throughout the whole thing. People have said it seems female. I don't think it seems female. I think it seems contrived.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm not dying on any hills with this one, but that second letter to me indicates behaviorally, I'll be very clear. It indicates from their own language, it wasn't the intent for her to die. And so, but I take that a step further on my end is I don't think it was the intent to take her at all. Because I'm still on the 50-50 in the world of maybe on what the true intent of this was, because the true intent was to make money and profit off of doing whatever they're going to do in that house, and everything fell apart. But like you said, that second letter is so puzzling, without a doubt.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I feel very confident that this was a kidnap for ransom, purposeful. Yep. But I'm going to say why I say that. It's because the FBI has said that. One of the few things they've come out and said anything about, and that's what they've said, is in writing, we are investigating this as a kidnap for ransom. And as you know, even to open a case, you're going to have to predicate it. And you're going to have to predicate it with the details of why you're opening this as a kidnapping matter as opposed to something else, a home invasion or something else. And so it is that reason that I just feel very confident that their evidence shows a kidnap for ransom and that they believe those first two notes have some authenticity.
So I'd love to explore this one because you have more experience on this, on the investigative side, on the criminal side. So they use a language, they're investigating as if it's a kidnapping for ransom. So not saying they believe it's kidnapping for ransom, as if gives that wobble room. So investigatively, Jen, do they have more tools available to them if they're investigating it as a kidnapping for ransom as opposed to if it was a home invasion for a robbery?
I saw it.
No. Actually, everything's going to be the same. So it's irrelevant it's totally irrelevant how they open the matter. They're going to have the resources available to them. But it's puzzling to me because I just don't think they would throw it out there. And I agree with you that it's not like I'm stealing this from Mac McCollum.
Right.
It's not like this was a marriage that was made. In other words, I'm 100% in. It's more like I'm pretty much in, but I could be a little out.
Right, because they keep giving us wobble words, you know, as if, you know, maybes, you know, and when you live in that world. So it sounds like they're hedging their bets and keeping it all open as well.
Jen, I wanted to ask you, yeah. I mean, you've been, Jen, through this entire process, you've been pretty confident in coming to some resolution with where Nancy is, or at least finding out what happened. You seem to be a little bit discouraged at this point. You said earlier that you thought at 6 months we'd have more. How discouraged are you? Are you thinking we're ever going to figure this out? Are you thinking that maybe this is going to be one of the mysteries of all time?
I still think that they will figure this out, but I truly believe I'm totally discouraged, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I just don't see a road that seems to be happening right now. You know, we've got the DNA, but DNA is going to take months and months and months. And so because of that, you know, I don't think that that's a road that's going to lead to anything anytime soon. And I'm not even convinced it's going to lead to anything, to be honest with you. The hair is transient, meaning you can have a hair end up in your house for any number of reasons. And then the other DNA, I think there's a lot we don't know about other DNA. But, you know, from my view, something should have broken by now. The other thing that bothers me is why in the world, unless they know who Porch Guy is and they're building a case, why aren't they doing more to find him? You know, I was just on with an attorney, and he said that you actually, in Arizona, it's an Arizona case, can set up roadblocks, and you can put Porch Guy's face on it and stop every single car.
Good point.
It was a case that held up under case law when they did this on another case, trying to solve a murder.
What do you think is keeping them from doing things like this?
That is the puzzling thing. You know, why don't you have billboards? Why don't you put it in Spanish? It's only one of two reasons. One, you know who he is. Or two, you're incompetent.
And do you think that is, Jen? Do you think it's because they know who it is or because they're incompetent?
You know, I cannot believe that our, you know, that the Bureau is incompetent in this way. I just can't believe that with, you know, we've been gone 10 years now, Robin, but it's hard for me to believe that. But I talked about this, how when we were in the entire, you know, everything was about crime. And then after 9/11 happened, everyone shifted over to counterterrorism, which is your world, a world that is kind of chasing ghosts in a way, meaning you do not put them on trial. You're trying to get your that is not the function of what you're doing. And so I worried back then, and we all talked about it. Is the next generation coming up and getting trained? Are they getting trained? Are they working extortions, kidnappings, and gangs and violent crime? Sure they are, but to much less extent. And that's why Kash Patel, he's changed the whole thing back to how it was. He's doing both, but you know, he even loosened up how you could get in, right? Getting in the Bureau. No polygraphs for some people. I know. Don't get me started. Don't get me started. I did a whole tweet on that too when it came out. I was so disappointed. I don't know. But I think he realizes there aren't enough people with that type of experience, and he's pulling in those people. That's another reason why I say this. Look at what he's done. He said, listen, if you're a cop or whatever, we're not going to polygraph you. Well, I don't know. Maybe they are polygraphing the cops. They didn't polygraph a lot of people. I wrote the whole list out. And nevertheless, you know, you just wonder.
That's some scary stuff. I know it diverges, but I'll keep circling it back to this, whether this is, you know, Nanos's department keeping the Bureau from investigating, or like you said, it's because of a lack of experience on the Bureau side to execute. But when you start shifting our onboarding process, which is a long, lengthy process, I don't know how long it took for you from the day you decided you wanted to apply to the day you came in. Mine was about a year, which includes three phases, and that the critical phase was the interview as well as the polygraph phase. And it's a lifestyle polygraph. And I mean, when I was in, because I worked the counterintelligence side, we actually caught trying to come in Chinese intelligence officers that actually were part of and they actually made it to Quantico before they're discovered and booted out. So you eliminate a lifestyle polygraph with those critical questions of who you were really working for. We might have some real big issues there.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if they've done it across the board now, but they definitely have gotten rid of it in certain circumstances. And yeah, I did a whole section on that.
So Jen, do you think it's an issue with Nanos' department, the Bureau side, or maybe a combination of both? Or like someone put in a tweet here, you know, maybe they know who it is and they're just waiting for them to slip up.
Well, that's what we all hope. We hope it's a Koberger just 5 months more out, right? Instead of being at 5 weeks, that, you know, it's going to happen, but they actually know it. This is my problem with believing that. You can't keep a killer, a murderer, most likely an abductor, on the streets and not be getting him off. And that's why you saw the blitzkrieg that happened at the beginning.
Right.
Because they realized, well, also they had hope that Nancy was alive. But in addition to that, are people safe?
Right.
I mean, who else is going to get kidnapped? I mean, I'm telling you, if I had any wealth and lived in Tulsa, I would be getting major security incorporated in my home.
Yeah, typically in these cases, when the only reason to not arrest someone if they're trying to go for someone bigger because they're trying to develop that conspiracy, the web of all the tendrils that go out from the one individual they do and know about. But I'm with you. When it comes down to life and a threat of violence against another human being, no one ever waits on anything. They're going to remove that person from the road. So with that, make sure you hit like and follow wherever you get your podcast. That wraps it up for the week. Check out Hidden Killers Live on Monday for less listener Q&A with myself and Todd and Lisa. And until then, for Jennifer, for Todd, and Tony, who's on his honeymoon still, we'll be back. And he'll be back on Tuesday. I'm Robin Dreek with Hidden Killers Live. Thanks, everyone. Be safe and have a great weekend.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now. And don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at chumbacasino.com.
Prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.